Today, the attack of the alligators, the slow death of real Australia. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, that is Post covering finance and property news, joined by Robbie Barwick again. Hello, Robbie. Great to see you back.
Hello, Martin. Good to be back. I wanted to get back with you. We did a live show a couple of weeks ago, but there's a lot happening on the front of stopping these banks from destroying real Australia. They're the alligators. We'll talk about that. And your channel has always played an important role in getting this notice enacted on. So where the clock is ticking for some of these places, and we need to act on it. And so I thought let's get back with Martin North.
Yeah, and look, just to reemphasize for everybody, the financial system in Australia is badly broken at the moment, but it's really hitting regional Australia most significantly, and it's draining the health, the momentum, the economic prosperity of so many places, and it's all deliberate. So this is a really important conversation, and frankly, I think the rubber has got to hit the road quickly, or it'll be too late.
Yeah. Well, and I call it real Australia because what's happening to these towns is an example to the whole country, all Australians, wherever you are, that the government is not going to stand up to the banks to put your welfare first. We have the economy is broken, the financial system is broken, but there are pigs at the trough who are gorging on it. It's not broken for everybody,
yeah,
right? It's wonderful for them. And that has to be addressed. And if they cannot, what I'm about to go through, if the government won't lift a pinky, and any of the major parties, I'm going to have a crack at all of them, if they won't lift a pinky in these circumstances, you cannot rely on them to address any of these fundamental economic problems. But Martin, I got some breaking news because I just had a brawl over the phone with Bendigo Bank, and not my local branch, with head office, because I contacted Bendigo Bank last week and I asked a simple question. Now, I'm I'm now the national chairman of the Citizens Party. I got elected to that position a few weeks ago, but I'm also, as you know, the research director. But the Citizens Party has a publication, a weekly subscription magazine called the Australian Alert. And I'm writing an article for that magazine and I wanted a piece of information. So I put my political journalist hat on and I contacted Bendigo Bank and I spoke to their main media inquiries guy, like the guy who deals with the media on behalf of Bendigo Bank. So he's no lightweight. In fact, turns out he's a former top financial journalist, which I didn't quite realize until I got off the phone from him. And my simple question was, when is the last time the chief executive officer of Bendigo Bank, Richard Fennell, visited the Queenstown branch of Bendigo Bank on the west coast of Tasmania? That was the question. Anyway, last week when I called, this person was supremely arrogant and he was having a real crack at me over the fact that he was asking what hat was I wearing? Was it a political? Because I was up front that this is for an article for the Alert Service, for the Australian Alert, but I'm also from the Citizens Party. Anyway, he just didn't want to have to deal with this question. So he said, put it in writing, and he claimed that's the normal procedure. And he gave me the email, so I put it in writing. And I wrote out that question, and then I made it clear that my deadline was tonight because we go to print tomorrow. So 4 o'clock this afternoon, still haven't heard. I called him on his phone. And then we went dancing around the bush all over again, where he just didn't want to answer the question. And so he decided to question my credibility and my bona fides, he called it, for even asking that question. And I soon made it very clear to him, Martin, that I'm not like a normal journalist, so I wasn't going to be pushed around because I'm not going to, you know, his bank doesn't buy ads in my publication. Let's put it that way, right? That's a factor, as you know. That's a big factor when it comes to reporting. Yep. So that's one thing. And then he said to me, he tried to fob me off by, he said, could I give you some background on Bendigo Bank? I said, okay. And we're just both clearly going through the motions here, right? I had the same tone of voice he did, because I was matching his condescension. So he gives me the history of Bendigo Bank going back to the 1830s, how it started in all the 40s, how it started in the gold rush to serve the miners, which is a very interesting point, because Dale Webster right now is working on an investigation about the fact that right now Bendigo Bank is turning down loan applications from every mining town in Australia. Now, put that aside. And then he starts rattling off these statistics about the fact that Bendigo Bank has more branches per customer than any other bank in Australia. It has the biggest regional branch footprint of all banks in Australia, right? Et cetera, et cetera. And he was giving me these figures. And he was just hoping that, like, that might work with a normal journalist, because that's enough to establish, how can we question their credentials as a bank committed to the regions when they're headquartered in the region, Bendigo, right? And they have this. Now, but I didn't come down the last shower. I've been reading Dale Webster's articles on this, right, et cetera. And so I said to him, but you know as well as I do, everything you've just cited there is a legacy of what your bank used to be like when it was committed to being the regional community bank in Australia. And that's no more, because you've changed your policy. You're not like that bank anymore. Plus, you're telling me about your 400 branches across Australia. You also know as well as I do, the more than 200 of them are community banks, which means you're not paying for them. The local communities are paying for those banks. So don't get sanctimonious with me about how wonderful that's supposed to be, right? All I want is an answer to a question, a very simple question. And then because we're talking about Queenstown, he said, well, how many withdrawals were made out of the Queenstown branch last year? It just so happened that today I was looking at those exact figures. And if you look at the middle there, he was asking about cash withdrawals. You see that in the middle, and the figure for 2025 is 61. But I answered and said, there were 2,400 plus deposits, cash deposits. And he said, no, I meant cash withdrawals. I said, well, you're just cherry picking that figure. Look at the deposits figure. That's right there. That's more than 25 people a day going into the branch for the 100 days a year you have it open, because it's only been going 2 days a week. And I'm saturating these figures, Martin, because I've been dealing with this town trying to save their bank. And I'd been working on those very figures this morning. And so he was rather taken back that I could answer these questions. Then he said, well, why was the bank only open 2 days a week? I said, well, that's because of what you chose. And he said, no, it's because we couldn't get any staff. I said, excuse me, unlike your CEO probably, I've been to that town. I drove that windy, twisty, dangerous road to get to that town. I met the locals. And when I met the locals, I talked to locals who had applied for jobs at Bendigo Bank, including a young woman with a university degree who got turned down so that the Bendigo Bank could bring in outsiders from Hobart and Launceston who only lasted a few months before they left. You're not serious. You weren't serious about not being able to get local talent. And then that shut him up. And so he said, well, I really doubt your bona fides. And that's what he was going to say, not to answer the question. And that's when I erupted. Now, I can erupt sometimes. Your regular viewers oh, yes. have seen that. I let him have it. The only little bit of modicum of respect I have for him, I thought he went quiet. I thought he'd hung up on me, because I said, don't you dare question my bona fides. I'm the leader of a legitimate organization with a legitimate question. We are in these towns advocating for these people. I've got the people on the phone with me who are literally in tears over the prospect of losing their bank, because it's a slow death for the town when it happens, right? They're heading for the precipice of that. And that's why I'm asking this very, very basic question. But as you know, it's a very revealing question. And eventually he made it clear, he indicated he hadn't hung up, but he fobbed me off and said, well, I'm going to talk to the to the government relations department, because I don't think a political party should be talking to the media department. You should be talking to the government relations department. I said, well, I'm not in government. And then I received this email, Martin, and this is, remember the question I asked, when is the last time the CEO visited the Queenstown branch? And the email came back, hello, Robert, thank you for your call earlier. I've discussed your request with my colleagues and we are unable to help you at this time. Regards. Now, that's what you're dealing with these utter bastards in these banks who are making these decisions. These are not unprofitable branches, and I'll prove that. Well, those that we can go back and look at how quite busy that branch was based on those figures. But they have their own agenda. They're moving to a brave new digital online world. They don't want to be bothered with these. Bendigo Bank has turned its back on its community banking model, right? They still exist, but he's not opening up new ones, and it's going to do to more what it's done to Queenstown, which is buy back the community bank and then shut it down. That's clearly where it's going. They're advertising to be a better big bank, so they want to join the ranks of the big banks, and this is the death of real Australia, because if you don't have a credit facility that can provide investment in these towns and just provide a basic service, that is what happens. And I've had people on the phone from Queenstown literally crying to me over the prospect that on the 26th of September, they're going to lose the last bank on the entire west coast of Tasmania. And they're employing ex-financial journalists to be their media bulldogs, right? To make sure that the kind of truth that I want to get out, you know, gets muddied with their sophistry. That's the banking system you're dealing with today.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it goes to form, doesn't it? This isn't the first time that banks have played these games and, you know, fudged the statistics and essentially say, oh, well, no, we're not doing anything. You know, everybody's running to digital, so there's nothing to see here. Where, in fact, the truth is, we know again and again and again, when banking services go, that is actually a death knell for the people in those communities. And it gets harder and harder for people, particularly older people, to be able to do their banking. And in some cases, of course, it also strangles the commercial operations in those Yep. places too. And I actually think it's the commercial end of things that actually, you know, is where the real problem comes, because if you can't actually handle cash and you can't handle transactions, you can't run your business, it's too costly. And that means you then go out of business. And we're seeing it again and again and again and again and again, despite the review that was done, you know, last year, and despite all of the jawboning from politicians that, yeah, we understand this is important, et cetera, et cetera. The truth is that the political system is completely captured by the banks, and the banks are playing dirty and continue to play dirty at the expense of ordinary Yep. Australians and ordinary businesses. And it's getting worse and worse. And in fact, the pace of failure in these regional areas is just rising because, of course, the banks say, well, we can get away with it, so we're going to.
Well, Landline, on which is the ABC show on Sundays, did a story on the town of Mitchell in Queensland and the decline of the town of Mitchell in Queensland. And the centerpiece of that 12-minute story was the closure of its last bank. And of course, it has that effect. In the case of Queenstown, the nearest bank is, it's interesting, the nearest bank is only about 150 kilometres away, but that's a 2.5 hour drive. Do you know why it's a two? Well, you know why it's a 2.5 hour drive, Martin. You saw the video I took of the road. And that's why it's a dangerous, windy road, right? That takes, so, but if you have to go to Burnie to do your banking, you're from Queenstown. Burnie's a much bigger town than Queenstown. As the locals know, you're going to do all your business there, all your commerce there while you're there, right? And money starts leaving the town instead of being invested into the town. Even though that West Coast economy, which the Bendigo Bank there serves, even though it's 4,500 people on the West Coast scattered over like 20 towns and small towns, but it's probably generates more than $2 billion a year in foreign exchange income for the nation because of its really valuable and diverse mines and a bit of forestry and aquaculture in the area. But a lot of really important mines there, not the normal coal and iron ore, but different ones, right? So it's a valuable part of Australia. but no one wants to be bothered to service it. But Martin, because of what you said, if we can bring that graphic back up, because I want to make two points about this. So first of all, just look at the template here. You'll have to take my word for it, but this is Bendigo Bank's figures that it's provided to the local town about why it's justified to close the branch. That's the exact template used by National Australia Bank. But this is not National Australia Bank. Why is Bendigo Bank using the exact template for these figures as National Australia Bank? And then the more likely answer is this is from the Banking Association, which means the Banking Association is helping to coordinate the massacre of these towns, right? They can't even come up with their own individualized ways to communicate to the people what they're doing. That's one point. The second point is at the bottom, the very bottom there, which is the business transactions, because you mentioned the effect on business. Just look at, and I think this is quite revealing. Look at the number of cash deposits and how precipitously it has declined since 2021. And all that reflects is not that people aren't depositing cash in the bank. It's that the bank hasn't been open enough. So when they're depositing, I suspect you'll find, and the bank will never show these figures, that the size of the cash deposits in 2025 are much larger than the cash deposits in 2021, because the businesses have to hang on to the cash longer. Because it's not like, I can tell you, I've been there. Queenstown is a cash town. It has to be, right? They need to try and find ways to keep cash circulating in the West Coast as much as possible. The businesses are hanging on to it longer. And I think that part of the evidence for that is the check deposits, because part of the decline of check deposits is that checks are being phased out, but they have not declined anywhere near as precipitously as cash deposits, because you still have to account for checks one at a time. The bank has to count them one at a time, right? You can't put them all together and just claim it's one deposit like they can with cash. So that is a real imposition on the businesses in the town. They've now got to worry, you know, they've probably gone and bought extra safes and something and stuff like that to hold their cash longer before they can put it in a bank, because the bank's only open 2 days a week. And that's in anticipation of this being sold off, of being closed down. And then, of course, when it is closed down on the 26th of September, you think those businesses are just suddenly not going to need a bank to deposit cash in? Of course they are. And then they have to go to the expense of going all the way to Burnie to do that, right? And this really is the slow death of the town. The woman who was on the phone to me last week, who started crying on the phone to me, she started crying because she'd taken her elderly mother into the branch, and it's now the first week of September. And she texted me because in front of her in the queue, the bank staff were offering the people in the queue in front of her pieces of furniture, because they're already giving away the furniture and getting rid of everything in the building in anticipation for this event. And remember, Martin, when they close on the 26th of September, they're going to keep paying rent on that building. Bendigo Bank will keep paying rent on that building until the 30th of June next year. They prefer to pay rent on an empty building rather than to continue to provide a profitable, I think a proper examination of that chart will prove what was publicly known until 2 years ago. When it was a community bank until 2 years ago, it was profitable, right? They prefer to pay rent on an empty building rather than to provide a profitable banking service. In fact, the only time that building will be unprofitable is from September 26th this year to the 30th of January June next year, when they're paying rent on an empty building. Now, what sort of bastardry exists in that between the ears of Richard Fennell, the CEO of Bendigo Bank, to do that? Not even extend it until the 30th of June next year. What sort of utter bastardry is going on? And the last point about Bendigo is They know when they made a big announcement in July that they're closing 10 branches, five of which are the last banks in town, and 28 agencies, 17 of which are the last genuine banking services in town, that this was a bad look. They know that. They've had a lot of politicians coming to them and trying to talk to them about it. So they produce an annual report a couple of weeks ago to show their profit figure, and their cash profit was $514 million. But they turned that into a $90 million loss by chalking up a more than $600 million impairment of goodwill. So they created a paper loss just so they could look like, this was a loss-making bank at the time when they actually had a over $500 million profit. You know, this is one of the alligators that's in the title, right? This is one of the alligators that are biting people.
Yes, and just to underscore, and I say this quite often, remember that accounting is fiction insofar that you can make the numbers do anything you want them to make. I can tell you about that because I used to work in those sorts of organizations and understood how they did it. And if you want to make a loss, we'll show you how to make a loss, right? If you want to make a profit, we can do that. But the truth is that the social consequences of this is not in anybody's balance sheet, right? The real impact on the society in those locations is not in anybody's balance sheet or profit and loss. All they're doing is looking at the numbers in a particular lens.
Yep.
Why, when you've got profitable business that you actually could develop and grow and, you know, stand for something? No. We're just going to follow the big guys. We're going to be like the big guys. We're going to play the same game as the big guys, as you say, probably with a playbook from the Bankers Association. And in the meantime, once again, it's ordinary Australians and ordinary businesses in these regional towns who are just messed over. But Robbie, my question is, why aren't the politicians getting up and saying, hang on a moment, this can't be allowed to happen? But they're not, are they? Well, apart from one or two.
Well, not for want of trying. And we had that experience. So last week I was in Parliament with Glenn Isherwood and Dr. Andy Schmuller. And I think it was the week after we last spoke. And we had, I want to talk about this because, you know, we had some bad experiences in the election, our party. And one of them was in the seat of Riverina, where Michael McCormack, the National Party former Deputy Prime Minister, he won re-election quite easily. He had a real crack at our candidate, Richard Foley. And Richard Foley had a real crack back, and he got in a lot of trouble for saying that. I won't go through the details, but one of the reasons that Richard Foley was very frustrated is because Michael McCormack was essentially given credit for the bank closures inquiry. The National Party essentially got the credit for the bank closures inquiry, and for the town of Junee in Riverina, where the inquiry saved its last bank, stopped the Commonwealth Bank there from closing. The thing is, though, that was all the Citizens Party's work. And you can talk to people, leaders of the town of Junee, who will acknowledge that. We did that. We got the inquiry going. You were an important part with Dale Webster of helping to get it up. Without that inquiry going, we would not have saved the town of Junee's bank. But we've been talking to the town of Junee before we got the inquiry going, and we use that town as an example, right, of here's a prosperous little town, but they've got one bank left, and if Commonwealth Bank goes ahead and what it's doing, the town is stuffed, and so that helped to get that, the case of Junee helped to get the inquiry up. But then the National Party comes along and they claim all the credit for it, and of course that helped them in the election. Well, we've had because the inquiry handed out its report in May 2024. It's been 15 months and the government hasn't responded to that report. But at the start of this year, Jim Chalmers announced the big four banks had all committed to a three-year moratorium. And so the big four banks aren't really, there's some tiny exceptions with little loopholes, but in general, they're not going around closing branches at the moment in the regions. So when Bendigo Bank made its announcement in July that it is this big closure spree, it was really conspicuous because they've been closing a lot of branches since 2020, except they flew under the cover of the big four banks. And this time they were out and they were exposed. So here was a test for the politicians. What are you going to do? Well, Thursday, I think it was the 20th of August, the whole town of Queenstown, plus hundreds of Citizens Party supporters around Australia, spent the day on the phone hammering the Prime Minister and Treasurer's offices, saying, save the Queenstown Bank. And the reason we highlight Queenstown is the lead duck, right? Because it's the most egregious case of a closure because of the circumstances I've described. The last bank on the whole half of the state, right? Just crazy that this is being allowed to happen. So the people of the town have mobilised. The people around Australia have supported them in mobilising. And there's a member of parliament, Colin Boyce, the member for Flynn, which is in Queensland. His hometown has one of the agencies that's closing. And Colin jumped to attention straight away. He flew into action straight away because he's a good member of parliament. He made the first statement in parliament against this, and he wanted to get up a question to the government, to put the government on the spot. Why haven't you responded to the Senate inquiry? Because it's been 15 months, and because you've ignored it for 15 months, you've given Bendigo Bank the green light. So this is his instinct, and it's exactly the right instinct. And I met him, and I met a whole bunch of other people there and we were talking about this. And one of the things we said to these people, Martin, because someone like Colin Boyce didn't have a problem, but you know, most of these members of parliament, one of the reasons they're so impotent on this is they don't think the government has the right to tell a private business what to do. Now, I'm willing to concede if it's a milk bar, down the street, the government probably shouldn't tell a milk bar how to run its business. But as you know, probably better than anyone in Australia, the banks are not normal businesses. And Andy Schmulo actually is a professor of law, plus he has the only doctorate in prudential regulation in Australia. And he knows this really, really, really well. And so he gave these politicians a tutorial about why these banks are unique businesses, who the government absolutely has the right to tell what to do, because they are all propped up by taxpayer guarantees, multiple taxpayer guarantees, and it's the deposit guarantee, which is enough for the banks to save a lot of money on when they source their funding. They get a lower interest rate than any equivalent business when they source their funding. That's worth $3.6 billion a year to their bottom line. That's over 20 years. That's over $72 billion to the bank's bottom line, right? That's enough to fund. It costs about $1 million a year to run a bank branch. That's enough to fund a bank branch for 72,000 years, right? This is Andy's point. So that's one guarantee. Then they have the discount window at the Reserve Bank, where they get a cheaper interest rate than any other business in Australia, right? Because of the discount window. Then you have, on top of that, the fact that, you know, you can separate out the big four because they're genuinely too big to fail, and their international creditors know that. So even beyond the deposit guarantee, they'd get a premium on their interest rate that way, right, as well. And then you've got things like how the term funding facility worked in COVID, where the Reserve Bank conjured up $180 billion, right, lent it to them at 0.1%, and they could lend it out at commercial rates. They were supposed to lend a small business, and they didn't. And in some cases, they could just park it back to the Reserve Bank at 4.35% and just pick up the spread, totally free money, zero risk free money, right? And the taxpayer picked it all up. Yeah. In exchange for that, the government has the absolute right to tell them, you're not going to close this bank, right? The absolute right. So a bunch of politicians actually, that door twigged with them. Oh, but they're the ones who wanted to do something. Colin Boyce was one of those. He's fired up. He's ready to take on the banks. He had two problems. One was the government. Of course, they're trying to deflect from this and not do anything. The other was his own side. The other was his damn National Party, the very National Party that's going around claiming the credit for the branch closures inquiry and stopping banks from being closed and caring about regional banking services. They all did a go slow. He couldn't get his leaders to approve his question for weeks. And then once he got it approved, the way question time works, the speaker is given a list of the people who want to ask a question. And he oscillates, fluctuates between the government side and the opposition side. But the opposition is everyone who's not the government. So that's all the independents in that as well. So they take turns, and there's roughly about 24 questions asked. And Colin Boyce's party leadership would not prioritize his question enough that in 2 weeks, eight question times, it was in those 24 to be passed. Even though on the second last question time of the sitting, Anthony Albanese got up to bring move question time to an end. You can watch this on video. That I was watching Question Time live, and I didn't hear what he said, but I heard the reaction to it. Colin Boyce must have called out, "One more question, one more question." And Anthony Albanese says, "Well, I'll say to the member for Flynn, if you get your question in the first 24 tomorrow, you can ask it." So the Prime Minister was giving him an invitation in front of the whole room, including his whole party, get your question up higher on the list and you'll get to answer it. The ball was then in his party's court, Martin, to put that question up the list. Did they? Bam. The next day, Colin sat there for the whole question time and didn't get a chance to ask the question. And I can tell you what, the people of Queenstown were hanging out for that question because they had hammered Albo's office and Jim Chalmers' office, and they were desperate for a response, a public response. They wanted the government to be put on the spot to give a public response, and the Nationals made sure it didn't happen. Right? This is, look, we're not going to have change in Australia unless people turf out these major parties. Seriously. All they do is go through the motions. There's good people in them. Don't get me wrong. We put out a release about this today. I think you've got an image of it there, Martin. I essentially told this story in this release today. They're the two leaders of the National Party, David Littleproud on the right and Kevin Hogan on the left. Both of them are bankers. This is a party that's subservient to bankers, just like the Liberal Party are. I mean, the Liberal Party, Susan Ley, the leader, she's had five of the agencies at Bendigo's closing is in her town. She flew to Adelaide to meet Richard Fennell of Bendigo Bank to talk to him about it. But when you read the article about her flying to Adelaide and the quotes in the article, she went there with the begging bowl. These people are not programmed to actually see the banks for what they are and pull rank on them. They're just not. And while this is the case, real Australia is going to keep dying at the hands of the people who claim they represent real Australia. Thank you very much. Because you can get angry at the banks, and I did at this little punk today, but the real issue is not that. It's the government sets the rules. Why is the government allowing these freeloading bastards who freeload off the taxpayers to get away with smashing communities all around Australia? And if towns like if town if situations like the last bank on the west coast of Tasmania is not enough for the government to intervene, don't for a minute think that they're going to do something to solve your economic problem wherever you are.
Absolutely. And it is really disturbing. And in fact, I'm going to run a live show very shortly where I'm going to talk about the growth of money supply and the amount of money flying around the system. One of the reasons why home prices are so high is the growth in money supply. Growth in money supply comes from increased government spending plus increased lending from the banking system. And the banks can lend to billio, unlike what some people think. And it's interesting that the latest ABS data today showed house prices were up again and the value of real estate was up again. All of this is because the government does not want to upset the banks. The banks are pulling the strings. The banks effectively are running the country and they're running into the ground. And unless we get a change of attitude from our leaders, Australia is really going to have no future at all other than being a massive building society and nothing else. And that actually is not going to be productive for anybody. So this is a critical, critical question.
And just one last thought, Martin, about the crocodiles, because as you know, we have a solution. bring back a government bank that can force these bastards to compete. We should never have sold the Commonwealth Bank, and we can bring back a government bank in post offices. There's more than 4,000 post offices in Australia, though if you're following the news, they're being shut like crazy right now because the bloke, the small-minded guy who took over from Christine Holgate at Australia Post, he's trying to get rid of as many as possible. But these are valuable assets that should be branches of a public bank, and it could guarantee banking services everywhere. But one of the groups that decided to oppose this was the Finance Sector Union. They participated quite well in the regional banking inquiry. They told the story about what it's like when these branches close for their members, et cetera, who are the staff. They told the story how the staff pressure customers to go digital. The customers are not willingly doing this. They're being pressured by the staff to go digital. So that was great. But then they inexplicably came out and said, oh, no, we oppose a postal bank. We don't think we should have a public bank again. And I knew when they were doing that to appease... They were smiling at the crocodile. They were trying to appease the alligators, right? The banks they work for. Well, look where that got them. Because today, a crocodile can't, an alligator or a crocodile can't change its horrible skin. it's an alligator skin. What did ANZ do? Announced 3,500 job layoffs today. The same bank that's been saying this is. As it's been closing branches around Australia, it's been saying, oh, no, the staff will keep their jobs. We'll just deploy them to some other back office role. What did they announce today? 3,500 back office roles are gone, yep. Right? Because and the other big four, an expert on banking I was talking before, said, expect now that ANZ has, broken the ice, so to speak, expect the other big four to follow.
And by the way, the answer will be it's AI that's allowing us to do this, right? So this is about innovation. This is about digital future. Look what CBA keeps saying. But unfortunately, AI can't do the sorts of things that real bankers in real branches do when they actually talk to real customers. So this is a critical crisis for us, which means we need to be actually getting on the phone and talking to our politicians and saying, oi, don't allow this to happen. This is critical.
Well, very specifically, the Senate inquiry that they didn't respond to yet made it, the second recommendation is a key one. It called for the government to establish an expert panel to look at this public bank option, including the postal bank. That's the thing to start demanding. I'm putting out the call around Australia to all the local government bodies that are in these towns, et cetera, get behind that call. So we don't need the government to commit to a public bank, just commit to following the recommendation to establish a panel to look at it, right? And that it will quickly take on a life of its own. So that's what the Citizens Party will be pushing for. You see all the details on our website as we run this campaign. Get behind us because that is the solution here. We've got to have that institution to break the power of these banks and start getting accountability back in government.
Absolutely, Robbie. Well, thank you very much for your time tonight. Really appreciate it. And we'll put some links and things below. And we'll keep fighting because this is so critical for the future of Australia and Australians.